And good morning, and welcome to the Poetry Show on the enlightenedradio.org network. My name is John Case, and I'm your host this morning for the Poetry Show. Now we're going to be surveying some poetry from David Wagoner, which we have featured here before at some point in the past, but only once, actually. I think my good friend Janet Harrison, who is back in town, by the way. Maybe we'll talk her into an appearance here. But not this morning. Anyway, and then we have some James Thurber. Take us back to the some parables here. We're going to head into some parable country, maybe. I might do a couple more parables, actually. And of course, we have our regulars. We have the Ode of the Day, which will, again, come from Pablo Neruda, a totally different, you know, subject. I may read a little bit of Bertolt Brecht this morning. I'm in an anti-fascist mentality mood here, and it's always good to go back to the commie poets in that case, who I think, as poets go, were the most consistent anti-fascists. I'm not sure all other occupations, they did it quite as well, the commies, I mean, but as poets, they were pretty good, and certainly Neruda was one. Brecht was another. I don't think Rilke was, but Rilke was like his politics were not easy to determine. He lives a bit in another plane of myth and story and images that haunt us still. But of course the greatest poetry of Neruda is not always his political poems. Some of his political poems are beautiful, poems about political figures, for example. I guess that's what I mean. But he has his lyric poetry about just everything from the vegetables in his garden to the beauty of children, or his love lives, had more than one, and are just incomparable verse. So it doesn't matter what they touch. So it would be wrong to sort of, politically categorize things, I think, in that way. But nonetheless, it's difficult to escape with these poets also, their passionate role that they played in the struggles of their times. And they did so on the left-wing side of the equation. So we're going to hear from some of them today. And some of them might be quite pertinent to our current situation. But we'll see. We'll see whether they connect or not. But we're going to start out here this morning with an old tune. It'll be a little theme for our 23rd Street this morning, since we're talking about left-wingers. And 23rd Street used to be the headquarters of the commie headquarters in the United States, and up there in Chelsea, New York City. And so we're going to start out with that this morning, and see what transpires as we head into the Poetry Show on the Winners and Losers Radio program, enlightenedradio.org.
This moonlight in New York will not go away. I sit here in this hotel, and tonight I'm just too drunk to pray. She said that she'd always love me, but that she might not always stay. Have a seat. Have a seat. And we can look at the world through this window on 23rd Street. came a long way to see her one more time. There was a subway to take me uptown. There was an address she gave me last Christmas, where she said she could always be found. I listened as she said she loved me. I'll always remember that sound. Have a seat. Have a seat. And we can look at the world through this window on 23rd Street. If you look closely down to the sidewalk, you can see yourself as a ghost. We would walk round the block with no reason to talk. Back then, we were younger than most. It's a love that you never will see. Hey, buddy, I don't mean to boast. Have a seat. Have a seat. And we can look at the world through this window on 23rd Street. Well, there's some folks bring love to a hotel, and some just bring their own quiet end. And my story's not one hard to tell, and I just wanna tell it again. She said that she'd always love me. All I need is to find her again. Have a seat. Have a seat. And we can look at the world through this window on 23rd Street.
Welcome back here to the Poetry Show on enlightenedradio.org. We're featuring, beginning this morning, with the poetry of David Wagoner. Let me give you a little bit of intro here on him. Born in Ohio and raised in Indiana, David Wagoner was initially influenced by family ties and ethnic neighborhoods, industrial production and pollution, and the urban environment. His move to the Pacific Northwest in 1954 at one of his, what was to become his mentor, Theodore Rothke, a famous American poet, changed both his outlook and his poetry. He wrote once in the Contemporary Author's Autobiography series, where he said, quote, "When I drove down out of the Cascades and saw the region that was to become my home territory for the next 30 years, my extreme uneasiness turned into awe. I had never seen or imagined such greenness and a promise of such healing growth. Everything I saw appeared to be living ancestral forms of the dead earth where I tried to grow up." And Wagoner's poetry often mourns the loss of natural, fertile wilderness. And he, you know, acquires in the transition to the Northwest a survival and an anger at those who violate the natural world. His first books, he's won many prizes over time. often compared to his early mentor, Theodore Rothke. He's been highly praised for skillful and serious body of work, won numerous prestigious literary awards, including the Ruth Lilly Poetry Prize, 2 Pushcart Prizes, and an Academy of Arts and Letters Award, and twice nominated for the National Book Award. The author of the author of 10 acclaimed novels, Wagoner's fiction has been awarded the Sherwood Anderson Foundation Award. He is professor emeritus at the University of Washington, and he enjoys an excellent reputation as both a writer and teacher of writing. He was selected to serve as chancellor of the Academy of American Poets in 1978, replacing Robert Lowell, and was the editor of Pacific Northwest, a Poetry Journal, until 2002. Here's a famous poem of his called "Advice to the Orchestra." And hold on a second, it goes. How long is it? Okay. All right. Advice to the orchestra. Start like pieces of string. Lank humbleness attached maybe to nothing. And then, oh, my harpies, brush over the rows and thrust music like brooms under their chairs. Rouse out the cats, the purses, and the dust. Make them all leap up. The ophthalmic trance breakers, the doggers, the midge killers, all the pick-faced gawkies and their crumbs. Give them music to break their glasses, to knock their eyelids up like hat brims. And when they run, follow them out of doors, out of windows. Assault their tails with chorts and tootles, oompas and glissandos. Snare them, give them no hiding places. Let them be draped in the reeds. Slide after them into dumps and suburbs, over trembling hairpin roads, across channels and bays to the tilted islands where water swirls on edge. Spiral through the tunnels, over the bafting rocks and the spokes of forests, and the last desperate wheel print committing outrage. Oh, my outlandish ones, offer yourselves through the mold on brass, through skins and bones. Your music must consume its instruments or die. Lost in the elbow joints and valves, in snaggle and crook, ratchet and pinchbeck, in the folded winds. Let the boom come. Send up the burning brows, the white domes of your echo. Stand in the pit. Strike the sides of your death. Let spherical thunder rise from the gravel-throated, unharmonious earth. The stricken center beyond the air, fringed like a curtain, through the cabbage leaves and the angels of the moon, the mercurial archangels rise to untune the principalities and powers, the squash of the sun, virtues and jovial dominations, the saturnine thrones, the calliope jumping cherubim and seraphim with their heads ablaze against the old god's mobile, eccentric knees. Pretty cool, huh? That's what they call the advice to the orchestra. You get a sense there of the richness of David Wagoner's language. He's really just burning up with words. And I'm actually going to go back and I'm going to read that one again because it's just so rich. And if you like poetry, as I do, it's the music of its expression that sometimes gets you, right? Um, Anyway, we're going to try it again. Advice to the orchestra. David Wagoner. Start like pieces of string. Lank homeliness attached, maybe to nothing. And then, oh, my harpies, brush over the rows and thrust music like brooms under their chairs. Rouse out the cats, the purses in the dust. Make them all leap up, the ophthalmic trancebreakers, the doggers, the midge killers, all the pie-faced gawkies and their crumbs. Give them music to break their glasses, to knock their eyelids up like hat brims. When they run, follow them out of doors and out of windows. Assault their tails with chorts and tootles, oompahs and glissandos. Snare them. Give them no hiding places. Let them be draped in the reeds. Slide after them into dumps and suburbs, over trembling hairpin roads, across channels and bays to the tilted islands where water whirls on edge. Spiral through the tunnels, over the bafting rocks and the spokes of forests, and the last desperate wheel print committing outrage. He don't like the cars in the forest, does he? Oh, my outlandish ones, he goes on. Offer yourselves through the mold on brass, through skins and bones. Your music must consume its instruments. Or die lost in the elbow joints and valves, in snaggle and crook, ratchet and pinchbeck, in the folded winds. Let the boom come. Send up the burning brows, the white domes of your echoes. Stand in the pit. Strike the sides of your death. Let spherical thunder rise from the gravel-throated and unharmonious earth, the stricken center, beyond air, fringed like a curtain through the cabbage leaves and the angels of the moon, the mercurial archangels. Rise to untune the principalities and the powers, the squash of the sun, virtues and jovial dominations, the saturnine thrones, the calliope pumping cherubim and seraphim with their heads ablaze against the old gods' mobile, eccentric knees. Well, you could probably pause on that. You can find that one, by the way, on the homepage of the Poetry Foundation for David Wagoner. That's where I'm reading it from right now. And I'll let you ponder that one for a minute. We'll play a little tune here on the, kind of on the same theme as Bill Morrissey here. Yeah, this one's called You Can't Always Get What You Want.
I saw her today at the reception. A glass of wine in her hand. I knew she's gonna meet her connection. At her feet was a footloose man. And you can't always get what you want. No, you can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. But if you try sometime, you just might find you can. You can get what you need. I went down to the Chelsea drugstore to get my prescription filled. I was standing in line next to Mr. Jitters. A man said he looked kind of ill, and we decided that we would have a soda. My favorite flavor, cherry red. And they said that they were all out of it. And would I rather have some other kind instead? Well, you can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. No, you can't always get what you want. But if you try sometime, you just might find you can. You can get what you need. Went down to the demonstration to get my fair share of abuse. You know we're gonna vent our frustration, and if we don't, we're gonna blow a 50 amp fuse. 'Cause you can't always get what you want. No, you can't always get what you want. It's sad but true that you can't always get what you want. But if you try sometime, you just might find you can. You can get what you need. You can get what you need. We're down. Way down, way down, way down, way down, way down in the... You can get what you... What you really, 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 really. You can get what you need. You can get what you need. Can't always get what you want, but if you try sometime, you might find you can get what you really, 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 really need.
Well, a little bit of Mick Jagger and Keith Richards there through Bill Morrissey and Greg Brown. Bill Morrissey's gone now. And of course, Mick and Keith are still around, thank God. We're going to return here to David Wagoner, and David Wagoner, it turns out, has a poem here called "From Hell to Breakfast." I'm reading from the collected poems, "A Gift to Me" from Janet Harrison, 1956 to 76, and Indiana University Press, somewhere way back, and. This is a poem called "From Hell to Breakfast," and it fits right in with our theme, morning theme here on the Enlightened Radio, which is the Moose Turd Cafe. I think you'll see why that is in a minute here. Anyway, "From Hell to Breakfast," David Wagoner, with a couple of edits. So leaving the night upstairs and minding their manners, they come and they sit down at the table at the Moose Turd Cafe. For what they're about to receive, God make them grateful and good enough to eat. It's been well prepared, our moose turd pie. But what made these kinds of appetites, you might ask? Tomato juice for vampires? Heaps of scrambled eggs while the rooster is still crowing? Yeah. Yeah, thinking about his babies. And what's the use of letting the night into the morning? Well, that's a question that's asked at the cafe every day. And the reason is so the morning can come. Got to get out of the night. Anyway, stir the sugar and cream into it. It tastes better. It will, I promise. Their eyes are the right colors except at the corners. Their clothes are as cool as the seasoning. Talking about some of our customers. Yeah, their eyes are the right colors. They are. Everybody got blue eyes here. Except at the corners. It's a strange color there. Sort of like on a brown side, I would say. And their clothes are as cool as the season, which is always dark. She put her face on straight. He had a close shave. But they seemed to remember someone screaming. Was it next door? In the street? She dreamed something was burning in the oven last night. A midnight snack that no one would dare to eat. Well, you're at the cafe. I'm not sure. On stumps like a veteran, something walked in his sleep. Like himself, cut down to size. Give them their daily bread and the daily paper. Hundreds were screaming if they had the time. Some fell or were pushed. Some ran smack into it. Oh, boy. Or woke up behind bars or landed in the Moose Turd Cafe for breakfast. Thousands coughed up their souls in the night, and two got in on the wrong side of the bed and cured their love like meat. Well, they may be excused if they wipe their mouths. No hands across the table here in the Moose Turd Cafe. No holes in the walls. No windows scattered across the floor. And it could have been a lot worse. And they could have been worse than it could have been worse. Well, they each have each other's names now on their shopping list. And in the doorway, they don't think much about their breakfast here. After a brief passage of arms, they're off. They're off and running for the rest of the day. And that was a little David Wagoner that held a breakfast in the Moose Turd Cafe. All right. Here's a little totally different one called Crossing Half a River. And I got a river theme here for the last couple of things here I'm going to do. So you got a picture here that rivers are probably one of the if you had to rate all the subjects of poems, I'm sure that rivers play a role in just a huge number of poems all over the world, every culture, every language, and we all feel that somehow when we are watching the river flow or swimming in it or rafting upon it or just crossing it, that and looking over it from a bridge, that we the sense that it's one of the grandest of natural metaphors for the course of life and time. That we're always sort of attracted to it because it encapsulates a time in a very profound way that our logics have a difficult time expressing. And that plays a role here in this more elevated verse here called Crossing Half a River. Stretching and heaving behind me, the snarled wilderness of crags as high as buildings, hanging valleys and paths cut by deadfalls, and cracks where cedars cling for their lives, hogbacks and spurs where no one comes or goes by his own choice. But here, an island in a river. The shore, broadened by summer, shelves down to the quick water. And hobbling, I come to the edge, a foot away. The fingerling salmon dart and then hover. In the riverbed, the stones turn as bright as birds. Splashed, speckled like eggs or the breasts of fledglings. being shaken in my boots. I start across as deep as my knees, hearing the rush of milk blue water coming down from snow as deep as my leaning thighs, and the downstream leg must lead the way. Groping and yawing as it reaches ahead, the upstream leg coming level in line with the current for shelter. In the deep channel, this body tilted, half buoyant, unsure of itself, its feet at cross purposes, gives up its footholds lightly, halved by a horizontal storm and a vertical sun, head swimming with light and arms like the stubs of fins fishing for balance. And then slowly it finds itself. More surely, the feet step down on time, pulled tight below them, not coming sideways. They wallow ashore on the downstream spit like castaways. The dividing river curves around its forks, riffling and whitening or smoothing deep in pools. And far off, the upstream point is a jumble of head-sized stones. But halfway here, on the spine of this bare island, gnarled by flooding winters, heaped with its own leaves, with the drifted rubble of seasons, a clutch of willows, like a broken garden, begins living and dying. Still separate, but slowly bringing a world together with what can still be counted on my fingers, with white-crowned sparrows and mourning doves and pipers and killdeer, with whatever comes to be caught at flood stage in the rains, when only the bent willows will keep their place above the crest of the river. Beginning, like all I wanted to say, with sticks and stones, when thought first stuttered against the current, I recognize myself by the water, now going into the water toward the shore, now dreaming myself across the river. So, there's something river-like about the language and the structure of the... it's like one long sentence, right? He doesn't have a lot of breaking points in the poem. And getting caught in the current, you know, trying to get to it halfway is and the loss of your footing, and the unbalanced thing. I mean, it's just a a meta poem, a poem about a poem about a poem. There you go, or a meta river poem. a poem about the river that is the poem of the river, it's really cool. I like it. It's got a lot of levels in it. It's recursive. And then this last one I want to do in this series here by David Wagoner is called Last Look, and it's written for a friend that died, and I think it's also about crossing a river in a different way. It's called Last Look. And it's written for a friend named Vernon Watkins, who died in Seattle in October 1967. He was crossing a bridge when I saw him last, a pack on his back, his gray hair glistening in the rain. He was looking toward the mountains, where the salmon in the channel under his feet were going that gray October. His pack was full of books. He was starting home. Eyes turning against the current toward the high snow, as clearly, as naturally, as the eyes of the homing salmon under him. All right, we're taking a little short break here, and this is a well, which one of these? We'll do this Nancy Griffith song from a long time ago. And it's called So Long Ago.
My daddy's
And welcome back to the Poetry Show here on enlightenradio.org. You can find us at enlightenradio.org. We have a podcast page too called podcasts.enlightenradio.org. And we're going to read a fable here. It's always important to, you know, to keep the keep things going at the right speed. And this is a James Thurber parable, fable, closely related, called The Owl Who Was God. And it's something for us to think about here today as we move forward into the rest of the day. Once upon a starless midnight, there was an owl who sat on a branch of an oak tree. Two ground moles tried to slip quietly by, unnoticed.
"You," said the owl.
"Who?" they quavered, in fear and astonishment, for they could not believe it was possible for anyone to see them in that thick darkness.
"You too,"
said the owl. The moles hurried away and told the other creatures of the field and forest that the owl was the greatest and wisest of all animals because he could see in the dark and because he could also answer any question. Said the secretary bird, "I'll see about that." And he called on the owl one night when it was again very dark and asked, "How many claws am I holding up?" This is the secretary bird. "Two," said the owl, and that was right. "Can you give me another expression for that is to say, or namely?" asked the secretary. "To wit," said the owl, "why does a lover call on his love?" asked the secretary bird. "To woo," said the owl. Well, the secretary bird hastened back to the other creatures and reported that the owl was indeed the greatest and wisest animal in the world because he could see in the dark and because he could answer any question. "Can he see in the daytime, too?" asked a red fox. "Yes," echoed a dormouse and a French poodle. "Can he see in the daytime, too?" All the other creatures laughed loudly at this silly question, and they set upon the red fox and his friends and drove them out of the region. And then they sent a messenger to the owl and asked him to be their leader. When the owl appeared among the animals, it was high noon and the sun was shining brightly. He walked very slowly, which gave him an appearance of great dignity. And he peered about him with large, staring eyes, which gave him the air of a tremendous, just tremendous importance. "He's God!" screamed a Plymouth Rock hen. And the others took up the cry, too. "He's God!" So they followed him wherever he went. And when he began to bump into things, they began to bump into things, too, to be like him. Finally, he came to a concrete highway, and he started up the middle of it, and all the creatures followed him. Presently, a hawk, who was acting as an outrider, observed a truck coming toward them at 50 miles an hour. And he reported to the secretary bird, and the secretary bird reported to the owl, "There's danger ahead," said the secretary bird. "To wit," said the owl. The secretary bird told him, "Aren't you afraid?" he asked. "Who?" said the owl calmly, for he could not see the truck. "He's God!" cried all the other creatures, and they were all crying, "He's God!" when the truck hit them and ran them down. Some of the animals were merely injured, but most of them, including the owl, were killed. Moral: you can fool too many of the people too much of the time. Ain't that the truth? Well, so having heard that little message for this morning, remember that little moral there. You can fool too many of the people too much of the time. I think we've seen some evidence of that going on here. Anyway, we're going to do right now, I'm going to do an ode. It's time for an ode. And after that, we're going to have a short break, and then we're going to do a close with a little bit of Bertolt Brecht for your edification today on poetry. Okay. And we're not going to do, you know, one of Neruda's political poems. We're going to do something a little more luscious here. It's called Ode to Her Scent. Now, an ode is a poem of praise, typically. But they can be inverted, you know, like Coleridge's famous Ode to Dejection, which is, why is it a poem of praise? Well, dejection is better than death. or at least that's the slant here. And that great poem, by the way, if you want to go read a perfect example of an ode, it's kind of been kind of inverted. I know earlier we were talking about Coleridge. Oh, Kubla Khan. That's right. Mike was reading a section of it. But Kubla Khan is like an ode to opium, actually. But we can get into that another time. Anyway, Ode to Her Scent. And this is translated by Ilan Stavans, who actually is the editor of this collection of odes of Pablo Neruda, just published this past year. Okay, tender love of mine, what does your smell invoke? What fruit? What star? What leaf? Close to your small ear, or on your forehead, I bend and stick my nose in your hair, and the smile searches, knowing the race of your aroma. It's soft, but it isn't a flower, and it isn't a stab of penetrating carnation or snatched aroma of violet jasmines. It's something, it's earth, it isn't only air, wood, or apples. Smell of light on the skin, aroma of leaf, of tree, of life with dust from the road, and freshness of morning shadow on the roots, the smell of stone and river, but also, even closer, the secret of a peach, lukewarm palpitation of blood, the smell of pure house and waterfall, the fragrance of dove and Calvary, aroma of my hand traveling the moon of your body, stars of your starry skin, gold, wheat, the bread of your touch, and from there on, the longitude of your crazy light, your vessel's circumference, in the goblet, in the eyes of your breasts, between your wide eyelids, and your mouth of foam. Everything leaves. It leaves in my hand. The smell of ink and jungle, blood and lost fruits, the scent of forgotten planets, pure vegetable papers. My own body is submerged there in the freshness of your love, beloved one, as in a spring or the sound of a rising bell tower. Above, between the color of the sky and the flight of the last birds. Love, smell, word of your skin, of the language of night in your night, of day in your gaze. From your heart, your aroma rises as if from the earth, light to tip of the cherry tree. In your skin, I stop your beat and smell the light wave climbing the submerged fruit of your fragrance. The night you breathe, the blood covering your beauty until it reaches the kiss awaiting me in your mouth. Pablo Neruda. Oh, my God. And, okay, so we're going to do one little tune here, and then we're going to another little Bill Morrissey cover of a Bob Dylan thing called He Was a Friend of Mine. And there we go.
He was a friend of mine.
cry. He was a friend of mine. He died on the road. He died on the road. Never had no money to pay for his board. He was a friend of mine. I stole away and cried. I stole away and cried. Never had no money and I can't be satisfied. He was a friend of mine. Just a poor boy, a long way from home. He was a friend of mine. He was a friend of mine. He was a friend of mine. When I hear his name, I just can't keep from crying. Was a friend of mine.
And welcome back to the Poetry Show. We're going to close today with our a famous poem by Bertolt Brecht from the 1930s. And a poem written, it's part of the resistance to fascism and led to a continuation of the First World War. Second World War. And let me see what we got here. We got what's the other one we got here? Right, Song of the Stormtrooper and the Burning of the Books. Yeah, so we're going to do these three poems by Bertolt Brecht. And the first one is called All of Us or None. If I can get back to the beginning here. There we go. All of Us or None. Slave, who is it? Who shall free you? Those in deepest, darkest lying. Comrade, these alone shall see you. They alone can hear you crying. Comrade, only slaves can free you. Everything or nothing, all of us or none. One alone, his lot can't better. Choose the gun or the fetter. Everything or nothing, all of us or none. You who hunger, who shall feed you? If it's bread you would be carving, come to us, we too are starving. Come to us and let us lead you, only hungry men can feed you. Everything or nothing, all of us or none. One alone, his lot can't better, choose the gun or choose the fetter. Everything or nothing, all of us or none. Beaten man, who shall avenge you? You on whom the blows are falling. Hear
your wounded brother's calling. Weakness gives us strength to lend you. Comrade, come. We shall avenge you. Everything or nothing, all of us or none. One alone, his lot can't better. Choose the gun or choose the fetter. Everything or nothing, all of us or none. And who, O ruined man, shall dare it? He who can no longer bear it counts the blows that arm his spirit, taught the time by need and sorrow, strikes today and not tomorrow. Everything or nothing, all of us or none. One alone his lot can't better. Choose the gun or fetter. Everything or nothing, all of us or none. And then here's another flip-flop poem by Bartel Brecht called The Song of the Stormtrooper. From hunger I grew drowsy, dulled by my belly's ache. Then someone shouted in my ear, "Germany, awake!" And then I saw many marching toward the Third Reich, they said. Since I had naught to lose, I followed where they led. And as I marched, there marched Big Belly by my side. And when I shouted, "Bread and jobs, bread and jobs," he cried. The leader wore high boots. I stumbled with wet feet. Yet all of us were marching to the self-same beat. I wanted to march leftward. "Squads right," the order was. I blindly followed orders for better or for worse. And toward some new Third Reich, but scarcely knowing whither, pale and hungry men and well-fed marched together. They gave me a revolver and said, "Now shoot our foe." But as I fired on his ranks, I laid my brother low. It was my brother. Hunger made us one, I know. And I am marching, marching with my own and my brother's foe. So I've lost my brother. I wove his winding sheet. I know now by this victory I wrought my own defeat. When the regime ordered that books with dangerous teaching should be publicly burnt and everywhere, oxen were forced to draw carts full of books to the funeral pyre. An old poet, one of the best, discovered with fury when he studied the list of the burned that his own books had been forgotten. He rushed to the writing table on wings of anger and wrote a letter to those in power. "Burn me," he wrote with pen, "burn me. Do not treat me in this fashion. Do not leave me out. Have I not always taught truth in my books? And now you treat me like a liar. I order you, burn me." All right, so that's a little excerpt from today and from Bertolt Brecht. And we'll close that today with the Poetry Show. And thank you for tuning in. And you can find these podcasts, by the way, on podcast.enlightenradio.org. And they'll be up here before the day's out. Thank you so much for tuning in. Take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next.